All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR, the number one HR podcast in the world, which I'm not quite sure what that gets us, but we do like to say that quite often. Brian Wimpen is actually on site in South Carolina. He will not be joining us today, but we have a wonderful guest we're going to get to here in just a second. I want to thank our show sponsor, People Clues, peopleclues.com, and Assessment Play, Brian's employer. Give him a look. Wonderful firm. And, I'm saying beautiful afternoon. It's actually, I'm in San Francisco today, so it's 10 a.m. for me, and so it's hard for me to say beautiful afternoon when it's actually the morning time, but I'm going to go ahead and do it for all the people that listen to the show at its normal time. Marty, let's do this. If you don't mind, tell us about you. Tell us how you got into HR-ish and what your current role is. Like, what do you do?
Great. Well, I am currently an employee relations specialist. So I guess translation, what that means is I deal with performance management and I also deal with leadership development. How I got into HR, I guess that's a kind of a unique story. I was in management for about 9 years. I've done hotel, retail, and restaurant management. And then, of course, the family came, and I needed to find a position that wasn't going to be nights, weekends, and holidays. And I saw an opening for an HR position, and I looked at the job description. I thought, I've done all of that, and made the transition over into the HR world, and I am just loving it ever since I did.
Wow. And, okay, so let's get into our big question, which is, from an HR perspective, what keeps you up at night right now? What's top of mind when you go to sleep that's kind of work-related?
Well, for me and with my company that I'm at today, one of the biggest things for us is succession planning and really making sure that we keep the company successful. And part of that is we've started some new programs here at our company. One has been around for a while, and we've just really defined it with our management trainee program and really brought it to another level. But with bringing it to another level, we've also looked at the other needs in our succession plan and how we're going to fill some of our future opportunities, and that brought on the engineer trainee program, and then we're also doing a sales trainee program. So it's really taking our employee development to that next level and really putting a focus on, I guess the thing that keeps us up is really looking at how do we stay on top of things, how do we get people to want to come into those type of programs, and how do we make those programs successful, as the program is an accelerated program. So how do we develop that employee and get them to be where we need them to be in 2 years? And a lot of times that could be they need to be a branch manager, or they need to be a head of a department, or different things like that. So how do we make sure we give them everything they need to be successful in that position? And how do we continuously look for those resources as a company?
Nice. So succession planning is something that we often talk about, right? So are you using, what size organization do you have? How many employees?
We are at about 1,400 employees. We're located in 13 different states, and we have about 58 different locations.
Okay. So how did you start with succession planning? Is it software? Is it process? Was it a kind of executive dictate? When you first started about succession planning, where did you kind of start amassing information, et cetera?
Well, I guess it was brought on by our executive council. They were the ones that really were looking at the goals of the company and what we were going to be needing to accomplish those goals within the time period that they had set out. And they knew that in order to accomplish our goals, we were going to have to grow, and that was going to be through organic growth and through acquisitions. So they really sat down and looked at what it was that we needed to do. We are an employee-owned company, so there are a lot of things that we like to keep. We don't want to lose the feel of that culture. So it was, how do we develop our own employees so that we don't have to look outside of the company for some of these opportunities that were going to be coming up in management? So it was started with our executive council and really looking at, we really need to put a focus on employee development.
Wow. So employee development, are you, you identified roles, obviously, so you identified the critical roles, important roles, and things like that. And so you're plotting a course. Are you using any type of, I want to say software, but basically like, you know, succession software or workforce planning software, or hell, even, you know, learning management as it gets to some of the training and learning oriented things? Are you using anything software related to kind of help you out through this process?
You know, we're not using any software for our succession planning side of it. You know, we're just as a company identifying high potential employees. We do, I guess, put a lot on our regional VPs and our executive council to identify those areas, and then we work really closely with branch managers as well as supervisors to figure out where those needs are. And we do a lot of training of our supervisors to help them identify high potential employees. But we do use a learning management center for training opportunities and different things like that. And we definitely take advantage of conferences and outside trainings. We also use the DISC profile with our high potential employees to really get a starting point and help identify this person, where they're at, and where we need to help them.
Nice. And with an employee, you know, owned company, I guess it's your engagement / retention discussions are a little bit different because, you know, they're a part of it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. I mean, everybody has a vested interest. So, you know, selling that idea to management and even employees in general is not hard. The culture is definitely different. Not sure if you've ever been in an ESOP, but when you walk in the doors, you truly see that ownership pride, and people do make decisions based off of that. And that's the one thing that we want to keep. I mean, we're a growing company. We started back in 1952, and we've grown so much, and we don't want to lose that, I guess, Midwestern small company type culture.
Right. Take us into the world of high potentials, if you don't mind. Like, what do you have kind of take around these types of people? Do you have kind of programs that you think best work with them? Is there coaching styles? Is there, are they just different and they need different things, or like, what's your take on high potentials?
You know, I think high potential employees do need a little different approach. You know, it's part of a lot of companies concentrate on their C players, and it's the coaching up or coaching out. But they do tend to forget about their high potential employees, and they don't realize that they do need to do things different with them. And I think that's something that our company has done a really good job of, identifying high potential employees. And we do go that extra mile. We do invest a lot of money into our high potential employees because that's the future of our company. So we do really get to know those employees. We work very closely with our supervisors and managers as they're working with high potential employees. And then I also work one-on-one with our high potential employees and just having conversations in regards to their development, what are their future plans, and making sure that we're putting them in the right positions, because it's one thing to have strengths and another thing to be using them in the right manner. So we really do try to put a focus in on that. So when we look at our high potential employees across the board, we don't have just a set program and this is what you need to do. We really look at the individual and work around them.
Do you think that there's a culture to an employee stock or an employee owned business? Do you think that your culture is just decidedly different from a publicly traded or even privately held or anything like that?
I do think that there's a little bit of difference. Of course, you know, the company is going to run like any other company. But when you really look at the employees here, they've taken more of the ownership. You know, employee-owned companies have more of an open book. There is very little that we don't share with all employees. You know, and I think that makes a difference. People really see the big picture. It helps to see where they fit, and it really helps to elevate the company to that next level. I like I said, I don't know if you'd see a tremendous difference, but you'd see the little things. You know, people, when they walk through an area, if they see something on the floor, typically in some companies they might just leave it there. But here, people are picking it up, and they're helping each other, even if it's not their job. They're greeting others. If the receptionist isn't at the door, they're saying hello, and they're stepping up. And I think there's a lot of things that in some other companies you might have to ask others to do. understand, in our company at least, as an ESOP, it's almost like you don't have to ask. It's almost known that someone's going to be there to help out.
Nice. You know, I want to get back to Hot Potentials for just a second. And really, it's kind of like, you know, how you have this expectation for yourself or this vision of yourself, and other people have either a different vision or a different perception. You know, as it relates to high performance, have you ever interacted with people that think they're a high performer and really, you know, when it kind of gets right down to the rubber meeting the road, they're not, or vice versa, where they really are, but they perceive themselves as not a high performer or not management material or anything like that? Have you interacted with people that have kind of a different vision of themselves?
All the time. And let me tell you, I've got to have those tough conversations in regards to, you know, what a high potential employee is and really looking at yourself and what you need to get there. You know, one of the things that we also want to make sure we put a focus on here is really looking at employees and training our supervisors in regards to their performance reviews. Are you overinflating their review because you're feeling bad that they're not going to be getting that high percentage increase? So you feel that if you just say a couple nice things on their review, it's going to make them feel better for not getting that, you know, 5% increase. So it's really working with our supervisors and managers and letting them know you're not helping them, because if you're writing a review that makes them believe they're a high potential employee and then I have to turn around and have the conversation with them that they're not, you're really creating a false sense of hope for them. So we do try to put a focus in on that, and especially when we do supervisory trainings, we put a strong emphasis on performance reviews and how, yes, it's an open conversation between the supervisor and the employee. However, it's got to be a true depiction of that employee, and we've got to, you know, I guess have some management courage and not, you know, take the easy road out. So, that happens all the time. And on the flip side, of course, you know, there are certain employees that you do have to kind of nudge along and just say, hey, you've got to have a little more confidence in yourself. You know what you're doing. You're showing some of those signs of being a natural leader. People are coming to you. And a lot of times I find with employees that don't feel that they're high potentials, they're just lacking that confidence. They just have never been put in a position where they've had to deal with a big project or deal with some of those decisions that, you know, at that point they might feel they can't make, but when it comes down to it, they're making them already. So, we do a little nudging at times and just say, hey, here's a great program. In fact, someone in our management trainee program right now, we had to nudge him along a little bit, and now he's very thankful because he's like, you know, there's a lot of things that I didn't know I could do, and being in this program, it's really helped give me the confidence to know that I'm moving in the right direction.
Well, let me ask you about leadership. Can leadership be trained for? Is it your belief that leaders can be? Are they natural? Are they just kind of pop out of the womb as leaders? Are they just kind of naturally born, or are they groomed? Or is it all about training? Like, in your mind, how do leaders get to the place that they're at?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think there are just some natural leaders that have those skills, that have that personality, that is really able to go out and build relationships and do everything that you would expect a leader to do. But I don't think if they don't have the proper training or the grooming or the word I like to use is influencing, then no, I don't think they would be that good leader. So I think it's a good combination of both. I do think that there's, you know, leadership qualities in everyone. There are certain things that that they might already have, and how do we build upon those strengths? I'm very big on strengths, leveraging strengths to manage weaknesses, and I think that's where you can really have that impact. If someone wants to be a leader and they're showing a lot of those abilities, then yes, you can absolutely train. And however, if someone wants to be a leader and they're not showing any abilities or any type of personality for it, I think that one's going to be a little harder for you, and you're going to get more of the taskmaster, more of the robot type leader than you are going to get a true leader that inspires and motivates others. And, you know, I guess at that point you're going to get your manager versus your leader.
Right. Do you have kind of any favorite leadership training, or do you have like a program that you really like to put leaders in? Just kind of see, you know, how they kind of evolve through it or how they come through it?
You know, I guess we don't use one set program. Like I said, we really like to individualize our trainings here. And what we do is we really look at different reading materials that they can do. We do different assessments. We also do different trainings, seminars, conferences, industry conferences. There's networking events. We like to just get them exposed to a lot of different things. We also use mentoring in our leadership development program. So we really try to mentor them and pair them up with leaders who have gone out there and proven to be successful as leaders. So I guess we just use a combination of everything. I wouldn't say I've got one favorite type of program that I like to send everybody through. There are set books that I really do like. You know, one of those, like I said, I'm really big on strengths and StrengthsFinders 2.0. I do like to send them through that book and that assessment. And then also I like there's a few leadership books that are really quick reads that I think really deliver a strong message. Well Done by Kim Blanchard is a great one. You know, the 1 Minute Manager, Monday Morning Leadership, all of those, they deliver that same message, but it's almost in different styles. And I think that's really helped some of our management trainees in understanding leadership and how do you develop your own. And we do a lot of coaching here. I have quarterly coaching sessions with the management trainees and just seeing how things are going and what have they learned, what are they applying, and different things like that.
What's the makeup of your leadership or your high potentials group? Is it predominantly female, predominantly male? Are they older, are they younger? What's kind of the mix?
Well, our industry is predominantly male, so we do have, I would say, mostly males going through the program, just simply because that's our industry and that's what we have. As far as age, it's all over the board. You know, we've got some that are just coming into the workforce that are showing that high potential, and we've got some that have been in the workforce for, you know, 10, 15 years and almost 20 years, and they're now, you know, I guess ready to move on to that next level, and they've already shown that they can do it, and just how do we groom them into a leadership role?
Well, because I know you like this stuff, I went through what's called experiential learning programs at the conference board, and I went through two of them, one at Gettysburg and then one down in Houston at the Apollo Center. So one of them was related to Gettysburg, which was a war, a battle that was 3 days long, and the Civil War, and then one of them was around the Apollo program when Kennedy said we're going to put an astronaut on the moon, et cetera, and that basically started the Apollo program. So experiential learning is basically putting people into that historical context of that event and then sorting out how leaders did what they did at that particular time. So if you ever thought that your team would love, like they just kind of get it or it would stick with them, if it was wrapped up in kind of a contextual, like Gettysburg, I mean, here you've got, you know, all of this history. You read a book, you watch the film, you go there, and you literally walk around the battlefield, and they're like, this is exactly what was going at 2:30 on that Wednesday. What did that general think? You know, I mean, like, so they tear it apart, and they bring it back, all back to succession and performance and communication, all the core HR issues. It's hilarious. But at the same time, it's just a great learning event. So if you're ever looking for stuff like that, I mean, there's other types of experiential programs, but I've been through two of them, and they're absolutely fascinating.
Well, it definitely sounds like it would be something that I would be all over. you know, for me, it's not just about reading a textbook and that's it. You know, it's about really applying it and what are you learning from it. You know, one of the biggest things here at the company that we do is we don't just assign you things and expect you to just complete them and mark them off your checklist. You know, we ask you, what are you going to apply them? We do follow-up calls. We do a lot of different things. And so, that type of experience, I think, would be excellent for our management trainees. So you'll have to send me that information.
I will. I went through the Gettysburg one in October of last year, and then I went through the Apollo one earlier this year. And just I mean, first of all, it's just fascinating to be in that moment and have all those pressures and have all the failures and, you know, just all that type of stuff. It was just a great learning event. So I want to segue real quick. We've got about 8 minutes left in the show.
Okay.
I want to ask you a little bit about North Dakota Sherm. You're very active, obviously. You're very, very active both, you know, local and at the statewide level and serving. So tell us, you know, what do you get out of all of your volunteerism and all the stuff that you do with kind of your local activities? You know, why do you do it?
Well, you know, definitely I am very involved with our North Dakota SHRM, and that's the Society for Human Resource Management. You know, I think it's really important to continue to learn and to grow in your profession. You really need to give back to your profession. And for me, you know, I do that by getting involved in this group. And as you know, and I'll let everyone else know, I am doing the conference chair for the 2011 North Dakota State HR Conference here coming up next week. But for me, it's really about giving back to the profession, and it's about networking and building a group. We do have a very tight-knit community, HR community here in Fargo, North Dakota, and it's just through the involvement and just that common want to advance the profession. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to stay on top of, and there's a lot of unique situations that seem to happen in HR, but they're not as unique as you think they are. They might be unique to you, but there's usually somebody else that's gone through that. So the reason why I volunteer and I get so involved is you do get to meet a lot of great people. You do get to share. You do get to network. And it's almost comforting to know that you're not the only one going through a certain situation, or that you have someone else that you can call and ask them for, hey, have you been through this yet? And I think that when you volunteer and when you do get involved in your local chapters or even at the state level, you get that exposure and you do get to meet a lot of people. It gives you the opportunities, and it's just what you do with those opportunities. And, of course, I've got to practice what I preach. You know, that's one of the things that I do talk a lot with the employees that we're developing here at my company, is that you need to give back. You need to take your strengths and talents, and you need to get involved in different areas. And you really need to, because that's what's going to help you grow as a person as well. It's not just about growing at work. I give back to my profession. I also get very involved with our United Way here in Cascalay. I am on their women's leadership board, you know, sharing my talents and my skills and what I do for a living. And then, of course, you know, there's the schools, and I do get involved with PTA. I think it's very important for me to show my children that volunteering and helping out and helping others is important.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple questions I want to ask as follow-up. One is, early in the conversation, you had said that, hey, I was, you know, having kids, having a family, and I wanted to kind of get my schedule. I wanted to kind of get my life, have a little bit more control over my schedule. It wasn't that HR was easier.
No, it's not easier. In fact, I'm questioning that.
As I understood it when you said it, I'm like, well, you know what? When you're in management in some of those positions, you're not in control of your calendar. They are, and they can kind of have you flying all over the place or doing all kinds of crazy stuff, which isn't as easy as having a little bit more control. And that's how I read it, but I want to make sure that that's how you meant it.
Yes, exactly. I just needed the job that had the hours 8 to 5 Monday through Friday on their job description, but I can guarantee you it is not a Monday through Friday 8 to 5 job. But I do have the luxury of being able to walk away from work and taking my laptop with me.
Good point.
So I can...
Oh, go ahead.
I said I can balance my life better.
Nice. Good for you. The question around... Have you lost anybody in the last 18 months, 2 years, that you can't quite, you're looking back, you're like, well, you know, Tim was a player. Why did we lose that guy? Like, what was it? Even with the ESOP and even with, you know, all the other things that are here, you know, have you lost any key talent?
You know, I can say that we have been fortunate in that department. When I look at the last, you know, year to 18 months, I don't think we've lost anybody that we were sad to see go. I think that we've done a really good job of retaining our A players and really keeping them moving and keeping them challenged to where they're not just leaving. You know, when we look at our turnover, in fact, that's something that we measure every month. Our turnover is actually within the first 180 days of employment. So they either buy into it or they don't. But when we look at our long-term employees, we're losing them due to retirement, not because of them going to our competition.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate, very fortunate.
Let's talk a little bit about social media, because I got a bunch of people on Twitter hit me up trying to figure out your Twitter handle, and I know that you don't necessarily have one. So I'm yet to tell the good people out there on Twitter that you're not out there yet.
No, you'll show me.
What do you like? What do you not like? What's become comfortable to you? You know, as it relates to social media, are you comfortable in LinkedIn? Are you comfortable in Facebook? Is there anything that you are comfortable in? Because I know that you're not on Twitter yet, but hopefully after I see you later on in the month, we can kind of go through it and. I think that while I might not be able to teach you everything, we could at least kind of cover some of the basics, et cetera.
Well, I'm comfortable with LinkedIn. I do use that site a lot with different professionals in the area. Of course, Facebook, who isn't? but that would be the extent of my social media, would be Facebook and LinkedIn. I just really haven't ventured much outside of there.
Do you use, now LinkedIn obviously a professional network, all that stuff, do you use Facebook for friends, family, et cetera, or is it also just kind of a hodgepodge and you have everybody in there? How do you use Facebook?
I know. Yeah, I keep my LinkedIn as my professional. That's where I, you know, my colleagues and different things like that. My Facebook is more for keeping up with my family and friends. It's, you know, you've got a busy life and raising kids and a demanding job. It's sometimes Facebook is what's going to keep you informed of what's going on in the family.
Isn't it true? I have a blurred line with all of these things. I have a love-hate relationship with every single one of the social networks, but I throw everybody into one thing. Like I got pulled over on Saturday, and so I took a picture of the police in my rear view and posted it to Facebook. I'm like, you know what?
Oh, wow.
That's how my day started, people, right there. There you go.
Great. Great. I love
Marty, I know it's MARTI, Jensen. Is that correct?
That's correct. JNSCN.
Well, Marty, you have been absolutely wonderful. I told you it was a very fast 30 minutes, but is there any closing remarks? Is there any closing thoughts that you have?
Well, you know, I just want to say that North Dakota is looking forward to having you out here next week for our state conference. I know social media is definitely a hot topic. There's a lot of companies out here in the Midwest that have been a little naive to social media, so I think it's going to be a great session, and we are definitely looking forward to meeting with you and seeing what you have for us here in North Dakota.
My first trip to Fargo, so I'm looking forward to it as well. You have been absolutely wonderful. Folks that are listening or that will listen, Marty Jensen, MARTIJENSEN. So, Marty, thank you. Have a wonderful afternoon, and I will see you next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Wonderful. Thank you.